Good morning. May God bless each one. Glad you're here. And may the Christ fill your heart. Appreciate what was shared so far as a cluttered mind this morning, thinking of David. Pursuing now, Jason, when you said nobody's running, I'm glad you went on and said like a wild animal being chased, because I thought you thought I was running yesterday. I was actually not planning on being here. I thought I'd be in Mexico this morning. God didn't exactly use a whale to get me here, but he did use an ornery guy behind a counter and some other things, so we're glad to be here. It's a wonderful day to serve God. And I'd ask something of you. Church in Puerto de Nales, Mexico, is having a bishop ordination today, and Nathan Mast and my brother Sam are in the lot there, so pray for that work. It's with the goal of starting a church in Mexico City, so a lot of things involved. So I ask you to pray for that. That way, that may be better than my presence if you all pray for them. So. Okay, this morning the message I have is kind of elementary, maybe in a way, but I found it's one I needed. I had two others I was working on, actually, and then yesterday, I think the reason Jason thought I was a Jonah was it was actually his turn to preach next, but Phil graciously would have filled in too, so thank you both for being willing. But because of the nature of the one and maybe being more of a message for the home church when most of us are here, and the other one being more of a series, I decided to go somewhere else this morning. So I've got two words. Let's just write these up as a title. Well, there's a filler word too, I should say. Now, if you feel like you heard some of this before, you probably did. It's because I need it again, personally, so you'll have to bear with me. But let's define these two words. They're not that complicated. Who would like to tell me what seeking means? If you're seeking something, what are you doing?
Looking for something.
You're looking for something, okay? Any other ways of saying it? Other words that we would maybe use more today? You're looking for something. What else?
Searching,
thank you. Any others? I think that pretty much covers it. What about finding? If you find something, what did you do?
Well, I lost it first.
Okay, you lost it first, so it indicates you have it again, in other words, right? Okay, any other ways of saying it? And so, oh, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Discovered the search.
The end of the search, what was the other
one?
Discovery. Okay, all good. Yeah, it's so elementary, I think we understand these. What, can somebody tell me, especially seeking, what's the past tense of seeking or seek? Okay, so scripture often uses sought, so that's those words we don't tend to use as much, so we have seek and sought. Okay, Friday, I, along with many thousands of other people, were out seeking deals, I guess, it seemed like it. There was quite a few besides me anyway. And or maybe some of us were just looking. I'm not sure if we were seeking or not, but I ended up with a few things, so I guess I must have been seeking whether I knew it or not. But we'll take a few lessons from life and from a few lessons from the house of Joe this morning, maybe. And as we think on this subject, seeking and finding, you know, there's a lot of seeking goes on in our house. I'm not sure how it is in yours. I don't really think it's a trait that's just peculiar to us, but maybe it is. There's a lot of things. We've got a husband and father in our home, Dad, who seems to have a hobby of misplacing his wallet. So he spends a lot of time seeking it. Thankfully, he finds it, too, for the most part, anyway. It gets kind of, it becomes a frustrating hobby when it's not findable. About that time, the wife starts wondering, why in the world don't you keep that thing at a certain place? The interesting thing is, the busy wife and mother in our home, I think the thing I see her looking for the most is probably her phone, maybe something else. And I guess she's a better excuse than I can. I'm sure she's busy and got a lot of other things on her mind. A cell phone's hard to keep up with. And that's kind of there. But now the daughters are kind of fascinate me. They, especially the oldest one, searches an awful lot for clothes. It's amazing where shoes and coats and stuff can turn up in it. It just boggles your mind. It's even worse than Dad's wallet, I think, but that's probably because I didn't lose them. And sometimes those are kind of difficult in the finding end, but usually we get there sooner or later. Then the next daughter, she does a lot of seeking too. Now that's more because we're so extremely particular. There's some times that we need a certain piece of paper or tablet with a certain pen, and that can be really difficult to align all those planets just properly. But again, a lot of seeking. Now the youngest one, most of her seeking seems to be for things she's not supposed to have, and she does an excellent job of that. And of finding, I should say, actually the seeking as well. And then we're even blessed with visitors this weekend that can keep, seems like the visiting mom and sisters have an awful time keeping track of their veils. They think we have veiling thieves in our house, only to discover they're still in the bottom of their suitcase or whatever. So I'm not sure who does that. It actually wasn't me in this case, so I have to blame somebody else there. A lot of seeking, and thankfully, a fair bit of finding. You know, as we look at history in the Bible, it almost seems like this has been going on for quite a while. So let's just think of some things. Let's think back, let's say a month. What are some things you lost that are still very much in your mind that you found in the last month? I'll start you off. We were going somewhere, I forget. Maybe it's been more a month, it was around there. I think it was around $1,200 in cash, and I didn't want to take it with me, and I didn't want to let it where I normally keep my checks and things for deposit, because I thought if somebody would come snooping around that didn't belong there, the first thing they would see is my cash. So I went and hit it, and being me, that was not a good deal. So let's just put $1,200 up here. I don't know how much you value $1,200. But while you're thinking about something you found, how long do $1,200 last? I think it would probably make a big difference whether we ask somebody on the front bench or partway back as to how long it lasts. It don't last me near as long as I wish it did. So we could put anywhere from a week to a year, right? If I give Rodney $1,200, I think he'd probably think he's good for the year. If I give that to Titus, he'd probably be a nice bonus for the week, but probably wouldn't get him through the year. So we'll just put down week to a year kind of range thing. Okay. Did anybody else lose anything that's very much in your mind? Oh, don't tell me. I'm going to feel lonely if y'all didn't lose anything that still is in your mind in the last month. Anyone? Come on.
One vehicle.
You lost a vehicle. Ooh, that's getting rough there. Okay. So, let's see. I'm not sure if I can write vehicle here. My brain's tuning out on me. I can't write car. How's that? Okay, how long is that? I mean, how long in your time frame of your life, how long is this going to have a radical effect on you?
2 to 3 weeks.
Okay, 2 to 3 weeks. Okay, good. Either that vehicle wasn't worth as much as my $1,200 had something else, huh? Okay, anything else? Did anybody else lose anything in the last month or so?
Too small items up.
Now, who does that affect, Brian? But anyway, since probably a lot of people don't know what winding in front of a rod is, that's good. How long does that affect you?
Well, it won't until I need it really bad.
So then it could probably be a couple days. Okay, let's put 2 days. Is that fair enough? The day you lose them, the day you have to tell me, covers that. Okay, what else?
A remote,
okay. How long is that affecting you, Nathan?
2 or 3 days.
Okay. You must either have more people involved or it's more important than something, so. Okay, you ladies not lose anything in the last month. Well, God must be good to you.
My son's shoes.
Your son's shoes, okay, great. How long is that affecting you? Okay, so we got an indefinite period here, so we'll just put a dash. Okay, good enough for now. So it's all things that have been lost in the last month, let's say. And sounds like some of them have been found. Mine has been. That's why I can talk about it with a smile. Took me a bit. Some of the others may be in the process, and it sounds like the shoes are, I don't know. They're like, I was talking about another person that has a problem with their clothes. I don't know, maybe they are. A pair of sandals floated down the creek, or at least one did a while ago. So, you know, when that happens, they're sometimes lost for good. But anyway, you know, as we think of these things, these kind of seem awful important. Is it the $1,200 in cash? Is it the car that's broke down or whatever happened to it? Is it those tools you left on the job, the remote that broke or whatever happened to it, and the shoes that are just missing? They all seem very important at the time. When you need shoes, you got to have shoes, especially this kind of weather. When you want to do that deposit, you want that money. When you need that tool, you got to have it. And so we get very much focused on the importance of the thing that we're seeking. At the same time, there's something else I hope we are all seeking, and it should become more clear as we go through the message what that should be. At the same time, what value do I place on that? I don't know which of these looks the most valuable to you. I hope the car is, for Stephen's sake. But doesn't really matter in the light of eternity how they're pretty much all the same, aren't they? Okay, let's look at a few scriptures. I'd like for you to open your Bibles to Luke chapter 11. Let's consider a few aspects of seeking that are needed if we are to find some things. First of all, I have to know and admit something is missing. If you don't know that your son's shoes are missing, you won't even look for them. If you don't admit that you have a need of that remote, you won't do anything to repair it or get another one. And you also, as you think of seeking, you also have to know where to look. Let's look at these verses of Luke chapter 11, verse 9. And I say unto you, ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and you shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. For everyone that asketh receiveth, and he that seeketh findeth, and to him that knocketh it shall be opened. That's quite the promise there. Ask, and it shall be given. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. But you know what each one of those requires is a realization for me that I have to commit, I have to do the action. I have to ask. Sometimes that's easy, sometimes that's hard. It depends what it is. I have to seek. Again, sometimes that's briefly, sometimes that's a lifelong. I have to knock. It all depends on what's on the other side of the door as to whether I feel like doing that or not. But then he goes on, for everyone that asketh, receiveth, he that seeketh, findeth, and he that knocketh, it shall be opened. Now, when it comes to a pair of sandals floating down the creek, maybe we aren't necessarily going to find them. But God has promised, as I seek the things that really matter, the things that are really important in life, as I ask him, as I seek them, as I knock on the door, it's going to be answered. That said, he said sometimes we don't like what's on the other side of the door, do we? So let's look at these three points. Know and admit something is missing. Know what we are seeking and know where to look. Okay, first of all, I have to know and admit something is missing. We've got a couple people in our house, especially with the cooler weather, they haven't got it into their heads yet, seemingly, that they need a jacket and shoes to go outside. And so they'll run outside like it was the middle of summer. At the same time, they'll stand there shivering and have a hacking cough. You know, they're not admitting that something's missing. As long as they're not admitting that they need shoes, they need the jacket, they're not going to go looking for it, right? You know, God created us as individuals to feel incomplete in and of ourselves. He did that on purpose. It's natural for us to look within and also without for something to give us meaning. I do it, you do it. Because of the way God built us in this way, the knowledge that I have a lack within myself is inherently there. You know, if it would not be We would not have people looking to fill that need in so many different ways. And I'm not trying to be judgmental here, but I'll be honest with you. When somebody has to go out and buy a $250,000 party boat on payments, they're trying to fill a need in their life. That's what they're doing. Because it's a dumb financial thing to do. And they're totally doing it to try to help themselves feel good about themselves in one shape or form. You know, the other person that's all tattooed up, has all matted this, all leathered up, shall I say, this kind of look. He's looking for something. You know, the man that's obsessed and controlled by his business, he's looking for something. The woman that's controlled and tethered by fashion is looking for something. Quite frankly, they all are. And maybe we say, that's all out there. Well, true enough. But I don't think that stops at the church door. You know, the hardest part is admitting I have a need. It's almost like anything but that. We can show it so many ways. You know, we hate to say those words, but we express it by our actions. I was just talking with my brother-in-law this past week, and I even forget what the subject was. It was nothing that important. I like to give him a hard time. But anyway, I told him, I said, we usually say more about ourselves by what we do not say than by what we say. And you know, that's exactly what I do. And I don't stop with me. I've watched people over and over, and you can tell a whole lot more by watching a person, or generally, I should say. As you look across that man in general, you can tell a lot more by where their priorities really are, by what they're really seeking, and by what they're actually finding in life. A whole lot more by what their actions than you do by what they actually say. We give ourselves away. It's almost, in a way, if it wouldn't be so sad, it would be kind of amusing. Especially as you work with some situations and stuff, it's happened to me a number of times, and it amazes me every time. This person is maybe sharing some struggles or whatever is in their life. And then they'll loop back around a long time later and say, oh, by the way, I have a problem in what was the most obvious thing in their life from the very first day you knew them. And we just do it. We give ourselves away a lot more than what we like to think. Makes me think of the saying, I think Dad or somebody had that one. What you say talks so loud I can't hear what you're saying. Or what you do talks so loud I can't hear what you're saying. So, do I admit that I have a need? Do I admit there's something lacking in my life? And I trust we all do here this morning. I know I need to. Because it's a continual thing, isn't it? Okay, number two is, know what you're seeking. Now, I have a funny thing I do at work. I don't know. I'm sure those of you that work with me have seen me do this already. I may be up on a ladder or whatever, and I'll climb down to get a tool that I need up top, and maybe I get asked a question, maybe my phone rings or something. I get distracted momentarily. When I get off, when I go back to finding my tool, I do this weird thing. It really bothers me. It kind of makes me wonder if I'm okay. But I walk around looking for something, and I have absolutely no idea what I'm looking for anymore. Until I stop and like, now what in the world was I doing? And I have to actually stop and think. And it's really dumb. Because you know, it don't matter how long I walk around the job site. It don't matter how many complete sets of tools are there. If I don't know what I'm looking for, I'm not going to find it, right? I can spend all day, all week, all year. But if I don't know what I'm looking for, I won't find it. It is impossible to find that which you do not know you need. Okay, so I said, I think we as humans, while we all seek something, many do not know exactly what they are seeking. Now, as a Christian, I'd say that's never true about me. At the same time, do I act like Joe on the job site, walking around looking for something, yet it's all there? But I don't know what it is. And a couple areas, maybe the first one, I'm not trying to hit up on youth this morning, maybe the first one is more there, but I don't think it stops there, is cool. You know, we want to be cool, we want to be included, we want to be looked up to as something or somebody for the vehicle we drive, the way we dress, whatever it is. And that's natural. But when I let that drive me, that becomes my focus. It kind of becomes a problem because, you know, one question I would have is, Am I cool when I think I'm cool or when other people think I'm cool? And if you take that long enough, I won't spend a lot of time on it, but it gets you a real terrible dilemma because you're never quite sure. And so you got to keep going. Anyway, that's enough on that one. Like I said, I'm not trying to beat up on that one. Another one is prestige or fame. So, and I hesitate, but it's so obvious. Maybe I'll use another illustration here. I won't mention a name, but so you spend 68 years pursuing this one goal in your life to reach a certain position in government, and at the last minute, somehow it slips away from you. You're lost as a person, you honestly are. And it doesn't stop there again. I think that's sometimes what happens in some church problems. You take preachers that have been preacher all their life, and I'm talking to myself, and for some reason it's better for them to step back. They become lost. And you know, that's basing our value. It's basing who we are, what we're seeking, shifts from where it should be onto something it should not be. We could go with wealth. You know, when does wealth, what level of wealth is fulfilling? I'm sure if you would come this morning and say, John, I'm going to put $100,000 in your bank account, would you feel good? I would be tickled pink. I really would be. I think I'd be wealthy, and I could pay any bills I have, and I could live for a while. I'm like, ha, got it made. But, you know, to somebody else, $100,000, I need a couple million for me to feel good. And, you know, on and on it goes. There's no stopping point. Wealth by itself. Another one that's maybe a little bit more sinister because there is, we do need them. But at the same time, is relationship with others. When I pursue relationship with others as an end in itself, all I find is disappointment and heartache. Because I'll be rejected by some people. I'll be misunderstood by others. And again, if that's what I'm really seeking, I won't really find it. You know, what we are all really seeking, if I was to boil it down, I would say everything all of us want, no matter our personality, no matter our background, is we all desire or want acceptance and value. You can say it however you want to, but that's ingrained in us. God made us to want to be accepted and be valued. And that can only be found in one place. It's not saying that all these other things I mentioned are wrong. But if I'm trying to find acceptance and value in them, I will never, never find it. I know an older man. He's actually kind of a friend in Horseshoe Bend. And he is probably wealthier than maybe all of us put together ever will be. By a big shot. At the same time, he's now an old man. His wife has Alzheimer's, and he is almost going crazy for somebody to talk to. And all he has to talk about is his achievements in all of his life. And you know, they're hollow because he has to, now that he's done all this stuff, the only fun he has is rehashing what he's done, because there's no other way to get pleasure out of something that's past, right? Okay. I'd like for you to listen closely just a minute here. The only constant in life is God. And that which comes from God. The only identity that satisfies is an identity with God. The only wealth that achieves true value is the wealth of God's love for me and in me. The only relationship that never disappoints, never rejects, never misunderstands, and not only does not cause heartache, but heals heartache, is a relationship with my Creator, Father God, and His Son, Jesus Christ. So this morning, do I know what I need? And do I know what I'm seeking? And it can't be found in Home Depot on Black Friday. That brings me to the next point. Number three was nowhere to look. Nowhere to look. And I hope this individual in our home won't feel that Dad's hard on her. But, you know, we got an individual with a funny habit. When she loses stuff, she will wander around, kind of have her nose in the air in these strangest places, and claim she's looking for stuff. Do you know where to look? I mean, if you lost your shoe and the last time you had your shoe was in your bedroom, you're not very likely going to find it outside on the porch or in the lawn, are you? But I guess that logic is still forming. But do I know where to look for what I'm seeking for? You know, in Luke, well, I should wait a minute there on that. And I have a few places that people look that don't work. It's as bad as me looking for one of my sockets out in the woods when I know it was never out there. And that's, we look for value, for acceptance in things, in ourselves, in others, in work and in business, and in study and in knowledge. There's probably more we could add, but in things. Okay, Rodney, how many things, how many trucks, tractors, whatever you like, would you need to be happy? You know, if you don't have any, one would probably make you quite happy, wouldn't it? If you have one, it'd probably take two or three or five or six. You'd have to add to it. Not trying to put you on the spot. We could go to Luke chapter 12, verse 16 through 21, where they have this guy that seems to have had some nice barns. And he had a really good harvest, so he evidently had a couple farms. And as he saw his tremendous harvest rolling in, he's like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to build a bigger barn. And I'm going to have even more. And after I have more, I'm going to say to myself, now you got it made. Really? I don't know. That story wasn't given us necessarily to make that point. At the same time, human nature generally doesn't work that way. I guess there's a few people that maybe reach what we call a point of saturation, but they have so much they don't even comprehend what they have. So, but for most average people, that never happens. Okay, how about if I look for acceptance or value in myself? What do you think will happen to me? Would anybody like tell me? I think there's two things that happen to people that try that. Anybody know? Maybe you've never tried it. I have. I've tried. I've had both. The first thing, if you look inside of yourself and try to find acceptance or value there, let me tell you the first thing, or one thing that happens, is you'll have to build a lot of air castles to fill in what isn't there. Because quite frankly, there won't that much be in you that's worth all that much. So you're going to have to compensate for it somehow. Some people are quite successful in that. Or at least they appear so. The other one is you get depressed. Because when you look inside yourself, what you see, if you're honest, generally isn't very good. And so you get depressed if you keep looking at it. In that light, of course, I'm not bringing in when Christ changes us. Okay, now what happens if I look for acceptance and value in others? And I'm not necessarily saying that I try to value others. What I'm saying is, I try to find value for myself by relating to others. What do you think happens? I told you already, didn't I? It doesn't go that long until you experience some misunderstanding or rejection. That just devastates you. And so this person that you thought was so awesome, and this person that you thought you could really look up to and just admire, all of a sudden just drops you. And it's terrible. So unless you find Christ, let me tell you, you run down the road and find the next awesome person. And you keep repeating this. And I see people do this their whole life, and it's pretty sad. What if I look for value in my work or business? And one of you brothers here, I'm not picking on you at all. I think we understand each other perfectly, but I'm going to use you as a bad example. You said that one time that when things in home or church don't go the way I wish they would or something, I just throw myself into business. Well, I mean, I think this brother's worked through that. At the same time, if you really do that, are you going to find it there? I like to go back to Marco, is that guy in Horseshoe Bend's name. He had a business like you'd never see. Like I'll never see, I should say. Maybe some of the rest of you might. At the same time, 70, 80, that business is gone. His children are gone. What does he have to show for it? Nothing but memories, and those have to be bragged about to be of any value. What about in study and in knowledge? You know, finally, if I know the most, let's say I know as much theory about the universe as Stephen Hawking's, if I don't do him a bit of good, does it? Because it's not brought him any closer to God. Why don't we turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 1? I thought it was going to be a short message, but I'm reading and talking too much, but I guess you'll bear with me. Ecclesiastes 1, I think I read this for a devotional or something here. The last year or something, but I just was blessed by this again. Here's a fellow that had some experiences I'll never have, and he says this: the words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit hath a man of all his labor which is taken under the sun? One generation passeth away, and another generation cometh, but the earth abideth forever. The sun also ariseth, and the sun goeth down, and hasteth to his place where he arose. The wind goeth toward the south, and it turneth about unto the north, and it whirleth about continually. And the wind returneth again according to its circuits. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is never full. Until the place whence the rivers come, thither they return again. All things are full of labor. Man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. The thing that hath been, it is that which shall be, and that which is done is that which shall be done. There is no new thing under the sun. Is there anything whereof it may be said, see, this is new, it hath been already of old time, which was before us? There is no remembrance of the former things, neither shall there be any remembrance of things that are to come with those that shall come after. I, the preacher, was king of Israel in Jerusalem, and I gave my heart to seek and to search out wisdom concerning all things that are done under heaven. But this sore travail hath God given to the sons of men to be exercised therewith. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and vexation of spirit. That which is crooked cannot be made straight. That which is wanting cannot be numbered. I communed with mine own heart, saying, lo, I am come to great estate, and I have gotten more wisdom than all they that have been before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I gave my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this is also a vexation of spirit. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow. I'd like to contrast that, without saying any more about it, to Psalm 16, verse 11 says this: thou, talking of God, wilt show me the path of life. In thy presence is fullness of joy. At thy right hand are pleasures forevermore. What a difference. What a tremendous contrast. Okay. Three things that lead to finding. Three things I'll have to do if I am to find what I seek. I have to place a high value or an ultimate value on that which is sought. Number two, I have to have a diligent desire for what I'm seeking. Number three, I have to be excited about finding what I was seeking. Let's turn to Psalm 119. Yet, Psalm 119, verse 1. Why don't I read this first? Psalm 119, verse 1. Blessed are the undefiled in the way, who walk in the law of the Lord. Blessed are they that keep his testimonies and that seek him with their whole heart. They also do no iniquity, they walk in his ways. Thou hast commanded us to keep thy precepts diligently. Oh, that my ways were directed to keep thy statutes. Then should I not be ashamed when I have respect unto all thy commandments. I will praise thee with uprightness of heart when I shall have learned thy righteous judgments. I will keep thy statutes. Oh, forsake me not utterly. Wherewithal shall a young man cleanse his way? By taking heed thereto according to thy word. With my whole heart have I sought thee. Oh, let me not wander from thy commandments. Thy word have I hid in mine heart, that I might not sin against thee. Blessed art thou, O Lord, teach me thy statutes. With my lips have I declared all the judgments of thy mouth. I have rejoiced in the way of thy testimonies as much as in all riches. I will meditate in thy precepts and have respect unto thy ways. I will delight myself in thy statutes. I will not forget thy word. Now I'll be repeating a few of these verses, but those three things that lead to finding: placing a high value on that which is sought, diligent desire for what I am seeking, excitement about finding what I was seeking. Okay, we read Psalm 119 there. The first one is placing a high value on that which was sought. What you feed grows. What you apply yourself to is what you will become. What you invest in is what you will gain. What you seek is what you find. I can't go out and seek wealth. I can't go out and seek prestige or fame and turn around and find Christ in that. It's impossible. It's a different path, a different road. Notice verse 2. Blessed are they that keep thy testimonies, that seek him with their whole heart. Verse 10. With my whole heart have I sought thee. Oh, let me not wander from thy commandments. We go to Matthew. We'll skip that. Matthew chapter 13, verse 44 through 46. We have a man that finds a treasure in a field. It doesn't really specify what this treasure is, but he hides this treasure. He goes home. He sells everything he has. He goes back and buys this field. Exclusive. He has to get rid of all this so he can get this. Then it goes on in verse 45 and 46. It talks about a merchant who's seemingly out buying pearls, and he finds this pearl that is worth more than any pearl he's ever seen. And he goes back home and he sells everything again. It says, selleth all, and goes back and buys this one pearl. We could go to my favorite verses there in Philippians chapter 3, but I've used them so many times on you here, I'll just skip that. But forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth unto those things which are before. Of its very nature, seeking God requires exclusion of some areas and inclusion of others. You know, when I seek God with my whole heart, it requires for me to exclude that in my life which would preclude my relationship with Him. It requires me to exclude all that in my life which He cannot work through and in. It also equally requires that I include in my life all those things that He can and does want to work in and through. When I seek God with my whole heart, and God is in my whole heart or has possession of my whole heart, then my heart is whole. Number two. Diligent desire for that which I'm seeking. And these are all equally important at the same time. This is probably one that's caused me the most grief, maybe personally and also in working with others. You know, I can take somebody that knows absolutely nothing about doing garage doors. And if they really, really, really want to do garage doors with all their heart, shall we say, I can teach them how to do it in about 6 months, for sure. At the same time, you take somebody that has almost knows how to do a garage door by himself, but his heart isn't in it. I can't teach him a thing. You know, you can do a lot for a person who does not have knowledge or experience, yet wants to gain. You cannot do anything for the one who has a lot, but just doesn't care. It's probably one of the most frustrating things you can try to do in life, is to try to get somebody somewhere, especially maybe spiritually, it's even worse. It's bad enough in physical things, yet their heart isn't in it. It makes me think of this one, this man growing up, he was part of a football team in a school. And they said they were all just puny little people. But he said their coach told him it doesn't really matter. He said, you need three things to play football successfully. I don't know whether this is true. I've never played football. But he said you need desire, desire, and desire. And you know, if you really want to be a Christian, that's what you need this morning. If you really want to be serious with God, if you want to get somewhere in your Christian life, you've got to have desire and desire and desire. Without that, you get nowhere. Notice again verse 2. That seek Him with their whole heart. Their whole heart doesn't let a little corner for me and my hobbies and what I want. Verse 4 uses the word diligently. Verse 9, by taking heed thereto or comparing what I'm doing to God's word. How does it match up? And I'll be honest, sometimes it doesn't match up like it should in my life. Verse 10 again, with my whole heart have I sought thee. Can I say that? And then in verse 11 it says, thy word have I hid in my heart. And when you hide something in your heart, you value it, you protect it, you cover it, and you make sure it stays where you can find it. I'll use another illustration here. And I'm not trying to run down business by doing this, and I love people who love their job. But follow this. You know, I know some men who love their business and their jobs. And some tell me the R's that they put in and the things they do. And it almost seems to me that some people, their job just can't ask too much of them. They're always happy to give more. You know, some of these people, not all of them, but some of them will actually neglect their wife. They'll neglect their children. They'll neglect their friends. They'll neglect their church. When the job calls, they're gone. And while most of these people wouldn't say so, at least not in Arkansas, we're probably justified in wondering, on some of them, what really is their God. Now, I'm not trying to necessarily run those people down. What I am saying is, do I pursue the God the way that some people pursue their business? Is my whole life given to and direct it in one thing? Is anything too much to pay for this pursuit? Is anything too valuable outside of that to lay aside in pursuit of that? Is anything worth more than that which is worth the most? And then going right on into the last one. Excitement and joy at the finding in what is sought. Now you can tell me, Joe, that comes after you find it. True. The excitement and joy of discovery of, what was the other word that was used? Finding comes after it's found. At the same time, that when you find something, the joy and pleasure you have in finding it is very much dictated by the desire you had in finding it. I really think that the excitement, the joy I have in finding whatever I'm looking for in life is the best gauge on how I really desired it in the first place. Let me use an illustration. My middle daughter, her grandma, mommy gave her, or somebody gave her this pen, I guess it's supposed to look like a bird. And the cap is this kind of a three or four pronged, it's supposed to look like a bird foot a little bit. And so you stick this thing in there. Well, like I said, she's very particular. And this little foot thing, this little cap disappeared, or she thought it did. And so she was seeking that. I don't know. Again, there was not a whole lot of intelligence being used in the seeking, but there was great devastation. And so we were looking for this little foot, and there was a number of us kind of getting involved in this because this is a pretty serious catastrophe. And when we found this little yellow thing and put it on the bottom of that pen, guess who in the house found out that we found it? The whole house. Everybody that was there that had ears and that was at all focused on what was going on around them knew that we had found that little piece. You know, is it that way with me? Have I found something I'm excited about? You know, and I have a book on public speaking. I was listening to that one man. I'm getting two books mixed up. The one was telling young people how to find a job. And the one question he said he asked young people when they're looking for a job, he says, what makes your heart sing? And as a Christian this morning, what makes my heart sing? Another thing in the public speaking book, they said, you need to talk about what you're passionate about. So what are you passionate about this morning? Notice, let's go back to Psalm 119, verse 13. It says, with my lips I have declared. You know, what I value, I will be excited about. It will be what I talk about. I found out that this thing of observing people, I guess, is a two-way street. Because I've recently had a couple other people observe me, and they tell me some things. Sometimes I wish they wouldn't, but I guess I need to hear them. But anyway, one person recently told me, he said, I'd like to see you sell garage doors. I guess he thought I don't know if he thought I'd be passionate about it or what. It's kind of the feeling I got. And I don't know if he's right on that. I told him I'm thankful my product pretty much sells itself. But it's true. I'll be honest with you. What I am most excited about, I find myself talking about. And you not know me know that. In fact, I think, I don't know if Brian ever said anything. I know Tyler, when he was kind of scared when I preached, because he said, you always preach about what's happening around you. And what's happening around me, what I'm involved in, that's what I'm excited about. That's what I'm going to talk about. That comes natural for me. Let's go to verse 14. He says, I have rejoiced as much, or we could actually put in more than. I have rejoiced in the way of thy testimonies more than in all riches. So now what would make you the happiest this morning if somebody with the ability to write you a check for $1 billion came through the doors and gave you a check that you knew was good? Would that really make your day more than leaving these doors knowing that you can have Christ in your heart changing you from the inside out? What would give you the most joy? What would put the most song in your heart? Verse 15, I will meditate in thy precepts and have respect unto thy ways. Going all right on to verse 16, I will delight, be excited, I will be joyful. Myself in thy statutes, I will not forget thy word. We could go to Luke chapter 15 where we have a shepherd that lost a sheep. We have a lady that lost a coin that probably was part of her dowry. Jason read, I don't know if it was in Luke or Matthew passage that he read there at the prison service Tuesday. But the same stories. But Luke adds a little thing. I don't think Matthew has this. But when he found the sheep, when she found her dowry coin, they collected their neighbors around them and said, "Rejoice with me, I have found it. I got it." Is that what you do with what you found? If you don't, I don't think you've found much. I'm just going to be blunt with you. If I'm not excited about what Christ is and has done in my life, I don't realize what he's done. And if I don't realize what he's done, he probably hasn't done much. That's being real blunt. You know, when I meet somebody, do they think I'm excited about the economical or political situation of the day? Or do they get the feeling that I'm excited about the latest scores and achievements in sports? Or do they get the feeling that I'm excited about what's in my checking account or what my financial statement in QuickBooks shows me? Do they get the feeling I'm excited about the product I sell, the CHI overhead door logo on my truck or whatever I have it? Do they get the feeling all I can talk about, all I'm living for, is the achievements that my children have in school or in life? Or maybe they get the impression, Joe thinks he goes to the perfect church and they've got their program and their act together. Is that what they think? Or maybe it's some other program I'm involved in and how we're solving the world's problems by working with people in this certain way. Is that what they think of me? Listen closely. Let me read you a few verses, from Paul and some from Peter. You don't need to turn to these. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 1 through 5. "And I, brethren, when I came to you, came not with excellency of speech or wisdom, declaring unto you the testimony of God. For I determined not to know anything among you save Jesus Christ and him crucified. And I was with you in weakness and in fear and in much trembling. And my speech and my preaching was not with enticing words of men's wisdom, but in demonstration or example of the Spirit and of power, that your faith should not stand in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God." If we were to flip back just to 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 23, I'll just steal a little phrase out of there. "But we preach Christ crucified." Galatians chapter 6, verse 14. "But God forbid that I should glory, save in the cross of our Lord Jesus Christ, by whom the world is crucified unto me, and I unto the world." 1 Peter 4, verse 10 and 11. "As every man hath received the gift, even so minister the same one to another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. If any man speak, let him speak as the oracles of God. If any man minister, let him do it as the ability which God giveth, that God in all things may be glorified through Jesus Christ, to whom be praise and dominion forever and ever. Amen." I'd like to read an excerpt from Pilgrim's Progress, Book 2. Christina and her boys, along with their friend Mercy, were at the interpreter's house. The interpreter had them into a room where was a man that would look no way but downwards, with a mud rake in his hand. I kind of take that to be more like a garden rake, what we maybe call a garden rake. "There was also one over his head with a celestial crown in his hand, and offered him the crown in exchange for his mud rake. But the man did neither look up nor regard the crown, but raked into himself the straws, the sticks, small sticks, and dust of the floor. Then said Christiana, 'I persuade myself, or I think, that I know something of the meaning of this. For this is a figure of a man of this world. Is it not good, sir?' says she to the interpreter. The interpreter answered, 'Thou hast rightly discerned. His mud rake does show his carnal mind. And whereas thou seest him, give heed to rake up the straws and sticks and the dust of the floor, rather than to him who calls to him from above with the celestial crown in his hand. It is to show that heaven is but a fable or dream to some, and that the things here are counted the only things substantial. Now, whereas it was also showed thee that the man would look no way but downwards, it is to let thee know that earthly things, when they are with the power upon men's minds, quite carry their hearts away from God.' Then said Christiana, 'Oh, deliver me from this mudrake, "That prayer," said the interpreter, "has lain till 'tis almost rusty, till 'tis most rusty. Give me not riches is scarcely the prayer of one in 1,000, one in 10,000. Straws and sticks and dust, with most, are the great things that they now look after." With that, Mercy and Christiana wept and said, "It is, alas, too true." How is it with you? How is it with me? What am I seeking? Where am I seeking for it? How am I seeking it? And last, am I excited about what I found? Did I find something? It's a given I will be excited. Now, that's not saying you all act like me when you're excited. I understand that. But are you excited in the way God made you to be this morning? Let's kneel for prayer. And Dad, you want to lead us in prayer, please?